guess.
Yes, sir. Thank you for doing it.
My name's Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And when Claudia was announcing me, and then she said Logan, I thought, oh, good. But it didn't work out. So you stuck with me. My sobriety date is January 12th, 1987. So for you that are mathematically challenged, that's 27 years a day at a time. And I've been very fortunate. It has been, by the grace of God and the power of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I've been able not to drink a day at a time. So what they tell us to do when we tell our stories is tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'll start right from the beginning. I was born September 26, 1947. So that means in 2 days, God willing, I'm going to be 67 years old. And I'm going to leave a little bit of that out today, just for the brevity. So, I'll tell you a little bit about my childhood because I think that's important. I was born in a small town in Ohio. I had really good parents. I had an older sister, an older brother, and 10 years after I was born, we got a surprise and had another younger brother. And I grew up in a real nice little town. It was a different life then. We didn't lock our doors. Mom would say to us in the morning, try to get back for lunch. Get back for dinner for certain. And then we'd eat dinner and then say, come on in when the lights went on. No trouble, no problem. Well, we didn't, there wasn't any trouble for us. I got in a lot of trouble, but that's just, that's part of my story. I grew up, I went to school, I played sports, believe it or not, I was an older boy. I think they put me up in front of the church so I wouldn't get in trouble, I think is what it was. But, I grew up a Methodist, entered, sports, went to high school, and, I think it was probably when I was about 13 or 14 years old and my hormones were starting to rage and I decided I was going to do what I wanted instead of what, instead of listening to that little voice inside that used to say no that I used to listen to, I started doing what I wanted to do. It's just the way it was. And the first time I got drunk, I think I was 12 years old, and we went to this, there was a little convenience store, and the guy used to have to go into the cooler to get a pop, so we would send him into the cooler to get a pop, and then we'd start stuffing down these little half-pint wine bottles in our back pockets, and after about 4 trips, we had enough, and we stole some Crook cigars. And we went out on a hot summer day, and there were 4 of us, and we drank that hot, nasty Phillips. And what was it? It was Gibson's Pheasant Hill wine, which is just real good stuff. And smoked those Crooks and got sick as a dog. Swore I'd never drink again, and I'd never smoke another cigar. I grew up to be an alcoholic, and I smoked cigars for 40 years. So, you never know what's going to happen. But, through high school, I drank a little bit, not a whole lot, because I was an athlete. But when I drank. It was just one of those ways. The first time I sat down with my brother and a couple of his friends, my parents left. And Joe Horky came over with a case of, some rock out. I don't know what, Stroh's or something like that. And I remember the first beer I drank. I didn't like the taste of it, but I drank 6 more. So I never drank for the taste. It was always for the effect, because once I had that first drink, I felt that, that comfort, that thing that we get, I was a little smarter, a little better looking, a little more athletic. I was all the things I wanted to be. And, alcohol, it worked for me, And, you know, like I said, I didn't drink much in high school. But, you know, I had a really good upbringing. And the reason I mention that is that, you know, a lot of times people think, well, I drank because of this and I drank because of that. I drank because I wanted to. You know, I didn't, you know, there wasn't any real deep-seated problems. I didn't have any. I drank because I thought it was a good time, you know, and it worked for me. You know, and I went to college. Went to Ohio State, joined a fraternity, and if you ever want to be, you know, if you want to drink, that's the way to go, because they have kegers, you know, and you pay that flat fee, and then, you know, you just, you know, you can drink. And I was the guy that when we had a party with two other fraternities, and I was the guy that they set up to drink against these other guys were big football players. They're great big guys. And I all drank them. You know, I thought it was neat. Then I went in the bathroom and threw up like, you know, you do when you drink two pitchers of beer in about 15 minutes. And, you know, and I thought, you know, that I had, you know, I had gotten there. But, you know, there was no mediocrity in the way I drank. I just, you know, when I started to drink, I drank. And you know, and that started a progression. And I got into my senior year in high school or in college, and you know, it was a very perplexing time for me. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was majoring in social work, and I knew I didn't want to become a social worker because I had enough problems with myself. I didn't really know how to handle other people's. And I went through a little bit of tough times emotionally with the breakup of a girl who I thought was just going to be the love of my life. And I look back at it, I'm so glad that she dumped me. But at the time, you know, it seemed a really bad thing. And so I decided I would do what was a real intelligent thing back then, when I quit school. And I remember I called my dad up and I said, "Dad," I said, "I'm going to quit school. I'm unhappy. I don't know what I'm doing." And I think what I wanted to do was I just wanted to get a job and drink, you know, to be honest with you. I couldn't see those goals set out in front of me. I could just see from, you know, what was going on in that day. And I remember my dad, he told me, he said, "Well, son," he said, "you know, if you're old enough to make an adult decision like that," he says, "you're old enough to take care of yourself." He says, "So we'd like you to call a lot. We love you. We want you to call. Just don't call for money." He said, "You can support yourself." So that's what I did. I moved away from the college town I was went to another college town where nobody knew me, tried to reinvent myself, and about that time, the Vietnam was happening, since I lost my student deferment, I entered the draft, and September 26th was number 18 on the lottery. So the first year out of school, I found out that there was a pretty good chance that I was going to get drafted. And I didn't want to go. And I didn't want to go not because I was afraid to go. I didn't want to go because there were 10 good friends of mine who I went to high school with, played ball with them, went all the way through elementary and all that. And they went in the Marines on the buddy system. And they came back from Vietnam, and to a man they said, "Hey, there's nothing wrong with what we did, but we don't really think that these people want us over there." And I don't want to get into the politics of it. But they told me to a man that probably it wasn't necessary for me to go, and I believed them. So I had to go underground. And I spent about 5 years underground. Couldn't get a job because then they would know where I was, and I was I was looking at a little bit of jail time for not going into the service. So I did the smartest thing I could. Since I couldn't work a job, I started dealing dope. And what that allowed me to do was, of course, do what I wanted. And you know, you can make a lot of money doing that. So I could drink very well, and I did, you know. And you know, one thing I should probably say before I go too much further is, you know, when you're telling your story, a lot of opinions and stuff that go in. And what we used to, when I first went to meetings, they used to have a disclaimer, and it said, if it doesn't come out of the first 164 pages, it's an opinion. And when you tell your story, you give opinions. So if some of the things I say tonight you don't like or you don't agree with or something like that, well then leave them here, okay? Because that's just the way it is. But, you know, so I got into a lifestyle where I was used to having a lot of money and I was used to drinking from the time I got up to the time, you know, I went to bed. Or I, you know, or passed out or whatever, you know. And I did that for a good 5 or 6 years. And, you know, it was a fun period in a way, and in a way when I look back at it, it was a waste of 5 years, because, you know, I didn't do some of the things that I should have. You know, I surely didn't further myself, that's for certain. But needless to say, by that time I was an alcoholic, because I had lost the choice to drink. At this time, I was drinking on a daily basis, and when I first, you know, once I had, all I had to do was have one beer, and then I drank until the well was dry, until I ran out. And a marvelous thing happened to me, finally, after about 5 years, is I met this woman. I saw these two twin girls walking down the street, beautiful blonde, and I said, boy, I would love to date one of them. One was taken, so I dated this other girl, and I found out that once I met her, I fell in love with her. And she was going to be the reason I was going to quit drinking. Because, see, I was one of these guys that thought, you know, I knew I was in trouble. I knew I was drinking too much. I knew I shouldn't be doing the things that I should be doing. But I always thought that there was going to be one thing in my life that it was just going to magically stop me from drinking. You know, it's just going to be poof. I was going to just turn around, and I was going to stop drinking. You know, I believed that with my whole heart. So I asked her to marry me, and she said she would. And I told her I would stop my drinking. Well, I got drunk on my wedding night, and probably every night for the next 12 years. We were married for about 7 years, and we had our first child, and for my little Jenny, I was going to quit drinking, maybe for about 2 days, you know, sad but true. And right when Nancy got pregnant with Jenny, I lost my job. I had a good job. We had moved to Cincinnati, Ohio. I'd gotten a job. I started out as a laborer. And within a year, I was a superintendent. I started making, at the time, I was making, when I first started, it was $2.50. I was minimum wage. And by the end of the year, I was making $25,000 a year. Back in, you know, in the 70s, early 70s, or mid 70s, that wasn't too bad of money starting out. In a lot of areas in my life, I was really well balanced, and you know, and I could still get it. You know, I could still go, I could still work. I was functioning. But when it came to drinking, I just didn't have a lick of sense. You know, it's just the way it was. It fooled me all the time. So we had a recession in Ohio, and I had to move. I moved to Texas. I tried for about a year and a half in Ohio to get a job, because I had, you know, had the baby and still had, You know, we just bought a new house, and we were trying to save all that stuff, and it just wasn't working. You know, recession wasn't there. I got a job as a janitor in a factory, making about $7 an hour. It was enough with the money we had saved. It was enough to keep the house, and it kept us afloat. And a friend of mine called me up from Texas and said, "Hey, they need superintendents out here." I build houses. And I flew out to Dallas, got three jobs in a day. I'd been looking for a year and a half for a job. Called my wife and I said, "Honey, we're moving to Texas." And I said, "I want to tell you, when we move out here, I'm not going to be drinking anymore. Well, you know, it's all going to change." So, meant every word of it when I said it. But when it came time to do it, when she finally moved out there, it was the same old thing. I kept drinking. She slowed down for a while, tried to stay on her good side. And you know how we try to appease people, and it wasn't working. But we had my second child, Chris, and another reason to quit drink. Didn't do it, not at all. Well, stayed in Texas for about 2 years and said, "Honey, I think what we need is a change of geography." So I took a vacation, came to Atlanta, found a job, told the guy I'd be back in 6 months, and he said, "Your job will be here." Went back to Texas, worked for 6 months, told my wife, "When we move to Atlanta, you should see it. It's nice and pretty. There's trees, there's lakes, you know, there's flowers. It's just a great place to live. We can grow our children up, and I don't think I need to drink there." You know. So got the job, bought a house, had new cars, had a lot of things monetarily and, you know, and all that going for me. But I had a problem with my wife wasn't happy. I had two kids that I loved with my whole heart. I had a wife that I loved with even more. I had all the right reasons to stop drinking, and I could not stop drinking. You know, embarrassed my wife many times, you know, and it was getting old. You know, it was getting old for her, and she was not happy. And you know, the darndest thing was I couldn't blame her. I was agreeing with her. I was agreeing that I wasn't the catch. You know, I wasn't the man that she thought she knew. I was unhappy with myself. In fact, there was a lot going on in my head that wasn't pretty, you know, because I was thinking about how I was actually living my life, you know, and all I ever wanted to be, from the time I was a little kid, is I wanted to be a good father, because I had a great dad, and you know, he was really good to us, and I wanted to be like him, and I couldn't, you know, because when that drink. You know, and you know how, and I'm sure all of you know this because you've lived it probably as well as I did, is I would get into argument with myself about my drinking, you know, and I would say, "Today I am not going to drink. I am not going to drink." I would promise my wife I would come home after work and I would not be, I would not drink, and had all those right reasons not to drink, and this committee of fools would get going in my head, and before I knew it, I just said, "Shut up," and I'd go buy it, and I would drink, because it was easier. It was just I'd rather take crap from my wife than I would be have these committee of fools up in my head telling me about, "You got to drink," because when it was like that, it was like that, and I hated myself for it. I hated what I was doing. I hated what I was losing because I knew I was losing, you know, and I could not, you know, as much as I love my wife, I could not, for the life of me, tell her that she wasn't, you know, I couldn't convince her that she should stay, you know. And it came to the Christmas of 86, and we were supposed to go back to Cincinnati to see your parents. And all I had to do on that Saturday, the Saturday before we were going to leave, we were going to leave on Monday. All I had to do was for 2 hours watch my two kids. You know, that's all I had to do. She was going to the mall. She was going to get some presents, and then we were going to pack up the car. And Sunday we were going to leave. And I got drunk. You know, and she comes home. And there are the two kids sitting in front of me, thank God, watching TV, and I was passed out in my easy chair. You know, I had one of those lazy boy recliners, and I was real good about falling asleep in those. I'm pretty much like Leo is here. She came home and I was passed out. Now all she wanted was two hours from me, just 2 hours, and I couldn't give it to her. I couldn't get, you know, I just couldn't. You know, I wanted to, and I couldn't do it. You know, and we got into an argument, and we ate dinner, and I went back in that recliner, and I fell asleep, and she grabbed those kids, and she booked her butt out of there with those two kids. You know, and I woke up that night, and probably about 9 or 10 o'clock, and I looked around my living room, and I went upstairs, and I looked for my kids. And I sat down in that reclining chair, and I just cried out. I said, God, help me. I can't do this by myself. And that was when I first asked for help. So I gutted it out, and like a trooper, went up to Cincinnati to her father and mother's house, and had a wonderful Christmas. Oh my God, they were on me like cheap suits, you know, and they should have been, you know. And the climax was on the day after Christmas. We were going to spend about 4 days. We ended up leaving the day after that. But my father-in-law was really a great guy. He said, Jimmy, says we're praying for you. He says, we are. We know you're having a tough time of it. And we would really love to help. And he says, but my God, Jim, don't you think you have a little problem with your drinking? And I looked at him just like a smart-ass alcoholic I was, and I said, no, sir, but I believe you have a problem with my drinking. And he just, you know, he just looked at me and shook his head. But that's where it was, you know. And so somehow I conned my wife into coming back to Cincinnati, and I think of what it was is she hadn't packed enough clothes and enough stuff. And so she, you know, she couldn't get out. You know, I sort of had been kicking it around and all this, and we were driving back from Cincinnati. We're coming down 75, and I remember this vividly. I felt like I had an out-of-body experience. I turned to my wife as I was driving down 75, and I said, honey, I think I'm going to check into a treatment center. And I swear I was in the back seat looking at me doing this, because those words weren't going to come out of my mouth, but they did, you know, and I spoke them. And I said, oh, God. So I went in, you know, here it is. So I went into my bosses. We had insurance where they had employees. Thing that you could go to the treatment center, and I told my bosses, I said, well, I'm an alcoholic and I need to go to treatment. And they said, oh, no, you're not. You're not an alcoholic. You just like to drink, because they didn't want to call up corporate and tell them that they had an alcoholic working for them, because I was their best superintendent. I built more houses than anybody else, had the best profit, because I was so worried about people knowing I was an alcoholic. I was an overachiever in the field. You know, but go figure. You know, I could keep my job because, boy, I had to drink. You know, and if you wanted to drink, but I'll tell you one thing I did that was really smart when I was drinking and probably saved my marriage, is I always got a job with a direct deposit, so that I never touched the money, because I knew if I had that check in my hand, forget it. You know, and my wife gave me an allowance, and then I used to do side jobs so that I could drink like I wanted to, because, man, that money she gave me just wouldn't cut it. And I had certain subs that would just you know, for me to get them jobs, and say, they'd just give me money, you know. It was probably crooked as hell, but, you know, it worked out all right for me. I thought it was all right, you know. A guy come up to me and give me, you know, 50, 60 bucks, you know, and I could drink all right for a while, you know. And I look at prices today, what it is, oh my God, am I glad I quit 27 years ago. I couldn't afford this stuff today. But, you know, so I told my wife I was going to go into treatment, and so they said, well, you know, we got an agreement with Peachford, so, you know, being the upstanding man that I was, I went to Peachford, and I went in there, and I told them I was there to take a look at what they had, you know, what it was going to be like. So I interviewed Peachford, and the whole time they're telling, stay, and I said, no, I'm going to be here in a week. You know, I'll come here in a week. Well, so I said, I'll be here next Monday. So they said, no, you'll never come. And I said, no, I'll come. So I drank real good for about a week. And finally, I was going on Monday. And back then, you couldn't buy beer on Sunday. So Saturday, my wife said, are you really going to go to treatment? And I said, yeah, I am. She said, here's 10 bucks. Go get you go get you some beer for Sunday. Because I think she didn't want me having the freaking DTs, probably what it was. And she said, just have a good time. Well, she didn't know I already had another 12. But so on the last the last day, you know, I was going in between the garage and watching football. You know, I drank a case of beer. And so I waltzed. I went into Peachford rather drunk Monday morning. My wife drove me there. And now I can't swear on this, but I'm pretty sure when I hit the door, I heard some squealing tires, and I'm pretty sure that was my wife getting out of there, you know. But so I went to Peachford, and I spent 28 days, and I won't say they were glorious days, but I spent 28 days where I learned about the program Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I was in detox, I told them I wanted a book to read because I had some novels, and they gave me a big book. And I read that big book. I read the first 164 pages twice the first day, and continued to read it a couple more times. I finally got over the other side. They told me in order for me to get out of there, I had to do through the fifth step. So not knowing that the fourth was supposed to be hard, I did the fourth and fifth step, and I got out of Peachford, and I found out what they did is they spent $30,000 of insurance money to send me to you folks, and that's really when my recovery started, because I came in thinking I was, since I had a an education from a treatment center, that I would come in here and inform all you folks of how you were supposed to do this. And I sat in my first meeting and realized I didn't know shit from Shinola. And I decided I would sit down and I would shut up. The first meeting they asked me who I was, I said, my name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And they said, Jim, you're an alcoholic, the addict, you can keep out the door, because this is AA. The only thing you have to have to be a member of AA is a desire to stop drinking. We don't care if you're a lousy house painter. We don't care, you know, if you drive fast cars or if you play golf or if you fish or you hunt. None of the other stuff. Well, the only thing that's important is that you're an alcoholic, and that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so at that time I was about 30-35 days sober. I made a commitment a two-year commitment to myself that I would give you people 2 years and see what you would do for me, you know. And I continued to go. I went to 2 meetings a day for the first 2 years. I read the book. I got a sponsor. I joined the home group. I did the things that I was supposed to do. But the most important thing that I did was when I was in the treatment center, they told me, and here, you know, we were running through the halls. We were having a great time. And, I mean, it was a bunch of crazies, you know, trying to figure out what the hell we were doing. And one guy comes up to me. He must have had a whole 16 days. He says, "Jim, if you want any long-term sobriety, you got to pray. You got to pray." So not knowing any different, I went down in my room, and you know, and I read that. I read the big book, and I read the chapter to the agnostics. Thank God I read that chapter, because that chapter was a lifesaver for me. And, you know, and I got down on my knees, and I didn't know how to pray, and I didn't know what was going on, but I got on my knees, and I just started talking, telling God what was going on in my head, and just, you know, asking him for his help. And I felt something, you know. I don't know what it was, you know, and I was too dumb to know it was a spiritual experience, but I mean, it was real, you know. I felt there was somebody on the other end, and I thought, hey, this is pretty neat, you know. So that was one thing that I came out of the treatment center was I knew that I could pray, and I felt, you know, that if all I had to do, and they told me in there that what that book was for was to for you to learn how to do the steps so that you could develop a personal relationship with a God of your own understanding. You know, and I mentioned before, you know, I went to church. I was, you know, I was a server. And when I was a kid, I looked at it through a kid's eyes, I just thought that God was in church. I didn't know anything about God being with me and all around me, and I didn't know that. And when I tried to, you know, when I got into a prayer life, you know, I started understanding that God was with me all the time. He wasn't just in the church, and he wasn't somebody else's thought. He was, you know, I was never ever again going to be alone if I chose it to be that way. You know, because the God of my understanding doesn't meddle. You know, he wants you to invite him into your life. And the thing that I got many things out of the big book, but the thing that hit me the most powerful of all the statements of anything in that book is at the end of the chapter to the agnostic. It says, as we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. And that hit me between the eyes one day, and I came to understand that it was for me to be proactive in my relationship with God, that it was up to me to put myself in front of him. He wasn't going to stop. He wasn't going to stop me from jumping out in front of a bus. He wasn't going to do any of these things. I had to come to him with my problems. And I know that God would he'll never harm me. He never will. You know, he'll never put me in anything. He never put me in any position to harm me. You know, the things that were wrong in my life were my choices. I heard a guy in a meeting say one time, he says, if somebody did to me what I did to myself, I'd have to shoot him. And I understood that. I had that feeling. I did it to me. Nobody else did anything to me. It was always me, you know. And that's just the way it is. And I took responsibility for my life. You know, I understood that I was the one that took the drink. I was the one that set it in motion. And I was the one that a day at a time, with the help of God, was going to have to, you know, get sober, you know. And so, you know, there's, you know, I can't give you a God But I can tell you that what the book says, he doesn't make harsh terms with you. And all you have to have is a willingness. And it's just real important just to try. Because as an adult now, with a little bit better understanding of God, I realized that I'm in this deal with Him. This is a partnership, you know. Every morning I get up and I read my meditation books and I get down on my knees and I ask Him to keep me sober this day and to protect me from myself and to let me know His will for me and give me the power to carry it out. And if by any chance He has anyone that needs any help, maybe send them over to me and maybe I'll be able to, through Him, help them, you know. And every night, I get down on my knees and I thank Him for the day. Because God is good and He's worthy of all my love. I know that. And all the good things in my life, they come from Him. And all the bad things that I get, well, not all of them. I mean, there are certain, you know, every once in a while a guy will back end you or something like that. But, you know, most of the things that go wrong in my life are my choices. So, you know, my life has gotten so much better because of this program and the way that it's been laid out for me and the way it allows me to live my life. You know, today I've been married to that same woman for 37 years. I was able to raise my two children. I have a grandchild. I've got a little granddaughter that's the apple of my eye. I get to watch her twice a week. And I mean, these are things that when I was, you know, 27, 28, you know, and first married, these are things that I saw slipping away from me, and these are things today that are reality. You know, my life is real good, and they told me it would get better, and every year it does. Kyle, believe me, next year it's going to be better, except you're going to have to start working now. God, that first one, it's a gift. You get to work now, buddy. But, you know, the thing, you know, that people, you know, they say your life gets better. We're not talking cars and houses and stuff like that. We're talking about how you feel in here. The meat grinder goes away. You start feeling a little bit more positive about yourself and the way you treat people. People start treating you better. You know, I'm just so grateful that, you know, one of the nice things about having long-term sobriety, a day at a time, is that you know for how many ever days that is, that God is seen fit to help me not drink. You know, it's a gift from God every day. And when you add all those days up or you look at it, you know, God's done you a solid. I have no doubt there's a God today. Yeah, no doubt. There's no doubt. And, you know, through Him, all things are possible. You know, and, you know, as I told you, you know, about drawing near to Him, I leave at 5 minutes of 9 all the time at meeting here because I have another commitment. I go to another church next door where I spend an hour, and I've been doing that for about 15 years, where I spend an hour just in prayer and meditation and reading. And, you know, so AA has given me the ability to get commitments. And today I know who I am and I know what I'm about. And boy, I didn't have a freaking clue when I was younger. You know, and I'm so grateful today for you folks, you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the God of my understanding. And, you know, I was sort of dreading doing this, but I'm sort of glad I did talk because, you know, every time you say the things that you believe in, you ingrain them a little bit more. And I'm so grateful that this group is here. I've been coming to this group from the first day that this meeting started because this started as a meeting we took to a guy who had cancer who was in my home group, Freddie Hall. And he was a great guy. And he was the guy that punched me in the chest and told me, he says, Jim, This is on my second year birthday. He says, "You are a rocket. You are a pillar of this program." And my chest went out, and I said, "All right. Thanks so much for having me." And it's not that I'm not running away. I have a commitment. Thanks.